Greetings, sensationalists from across the fruity plains.
You're listening to the Andy Finn Show.
The smooth talk of the town.
Cool. We are back on the Andy Finn Show, and today is November 3rd. No, I'm sorry, it's not. It's December 3rd. And on this date, in 1982, doctors removed the respirator from Barney Clark. Now, you may remember Barney Clark. Don't confuse him with Barney Frank. Barney Clark received the first gay heart transplant in history. Now, you didn't know some hearts could be gay, did you? But it turns out it's genetic. No, none of this is true, except that some people do confuse Barney Frank and Barney Clark. I guess because Frank and Clark both end in K and start with Barney. In any case, Barney Frank is the gay congressman from New York. Barney Clark was the first recipient of a permanent artificial heart. He only lived one day, but they learned a lot, I guess. And the other thing that's interesting, that was 82. In 1967, on the same day, December 3rd, a team of surgeons headed by Christian Barnard, the guy who gets credit for performing the first human heart transplant, performed the first human heart transplant in South Africa. What's interesting is we never know the name. You don't hear the name of the man that got the first heart transplant, do you? Anybody remember out there? His name was Louis Washkansky. Maybe it's hard to remember because unlike Frank and Clark, it doesn't end in K. Although it has two K's in it. Washkansky. Sounds vaguely Polish, doesn't it? And do you remember how long he lived with the first heart transplant? 18 days. Okay, so back to Karl Rove and all of this. So I guess what I want to say next is that Andy Card spoke up, and when he was told what Karl Rove said, had this to say.
Right now, let's bring in Andrew Card. He is.
This is on Morning Joe, Joe Scarborough's Morning Show.
He joins us from Washington, D.C. Andy, thank you so much for being with us.
Top of the morning to you. Good to be with
you. Top of the morning, you two. We have to start with something that we all were talking about a couple days ago, where Karl Rove went on Charlie Rose, and he blamed the Democrats for pushing him and the president into war. Is that how it worked?
No. That is not the way it worked.
Oh, what the hell? Seriously, what the hell was that about?
The Democrats
about?
Have pushed us into a lot of stupid things, but they didn't push us into war.
Yeah.
Okay,
so,
then.
What was it? You work with Carl. Is that just Carl spinning beyond the White House?
Spinning out of control?
Carl is very smart. He's sometimes his brain gets ahead of his mouth. And sometimes his mouth gets ahead of his brain.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know that that was either, but I think what they're trying to say there, and what's interesting is Joe Scarborough misrepresented Karl Rove's position there. He said that Rove said that it was the Democrats pushing them to war. No, what he said was it was the Democrats that forced the vote before the election. Now, as I pointed out before, what's wrong about that is that the White House put the Democrats on the spot and said, we need your support now. And the Democrats said, look, if they're going to make this an election year issue, and they clearly were using it as an election year club, and that's where Rove is lying through his teeth. The Democrats said, if you're going to use this as a club, a national security club, less than a year after 9/11 on us, we'll sign up for it now, get it off the front burner, and then talk about other issues, because otherwise it'll be the only issue that gets used in this fear-inspired atmosphere post 9/11, right up until Election Day. So it's true that the Democrats, once they were forced by the Bush administration to deal with it before the election, said, let's do it sooner rather than later. But it's false to suggest that, oh, they didn't want to politicize it. In the White House, the last thing they wanted was a vote before the election. That is just nonsense. They are the ones that forced the Democrats to deal with it before the election. So the Democrats said, okay, we're going to do it sooner rather than later and hope we can talk about some other issues for the 2002 election. But let's go on to another topic, because Karl Rove is all over the place now. Of course, he had time to be on a conference call, a video conference call with me, so you know he's got too much time on his hands. But in addition, he appeared on Fox News Sunday yesterday, December 2nd, and Chris Wallace was talking to him about Republican candidates coming up in the 2008 election. Well, what do you expect? Rove is a loyal Republican, so he puts the best face on it. Basically, they're looking at Custer's last stand from all appearances. But here's Rove's take on it.
Let me show you another set of polls if we have. The president's job approval is now down to 36%. But Congress's is even lower, as you can see there, 26%. So, and let me start with you, Mr. Rove. You can respond to this and that. Which is a bigger burden, Mr. Bush for the Republicans or the Democratic Congress for the Democrats?
Well, before we hear Rove's answer, let me say this. One of the interesting things about these poll numbers, Bush is at 36%. That's the base, 36% of the conservative Republican base is still supporting him. That's all he's got. He has virtually no independents and, of course, no Democrats. When you get to Congress, it's a more complex issue. And the numbers are up to 26% for Congress, but they were even lower. But here's the reason. Republicans don't like Democrats in Congress, and Democrats don't like Republicans. So already, you don't like half the Congress. And then if you're unhappy with what your side's doing, you're going to like them even less. So when they say 26%, basically, the Republicans don't like Congress because it's a Democratic Congress, and the Democrats don't like their own Congress or the Democratic leadership in Congress because they haven't ended the war. But notice that Rove doesn't even mention the Iraq War and the fact that Congress was elected ostensibly to do something about it, and they haven't done much. Instead, he argues all kinds of other things from a Republican's point of view, those rose-colored glasses, that paradigm that only a Rovian Republican can have.
Democrat Congress will be on the ballot.
Oh, yeah, let me stop there. You notice he said the Democrat Congress. So if you haven't picked up on this, this is an insult that Republicans hurl at Democrats every chance they get. Not people like John McCain, all right, but George Bush does it, Karl Rove does it, certainly Rush Limbaugh and the talk show hosts all try and do it now. The memo has gone out, or however they picked up on it. They have decided they don't like calling the Democrats what they want to be called, the Democratic Party, right, in the same way the Republican Party. They say, well, we're Republicans, and so it's the Republican Party, and you're Democrats, so you're the Democrat Party. No, they're the Democratic Party. That's what they want to be called, and yet the opposition refuses to extend them that courtesy. It's extremely petty. Can you imagine when Muhammad Ali decided to change his name from Cassius Clay to Muhammad Ali if a whole section of the country, half the country, said, we're not going to do that. We're going to keep calling you Cassius Clay. In fact, a few people did for a while. And then it became clear how petty they were being, and even that stopped. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar changed his name. Madonna took on a persona. Bob Dylan. They all changed their names, and we extend them the courtesy. We allow people to be called what they want, but not Republicans. They will not be big enough to call Democrats Democrats. They refer to them as the Democrat Party. They won't call them the Democratic Party. Really interesting and really petty. Let me let Karl Rove continue.
President Bush won't be. And look, they've got momentum. I grant you that. They have momentum that went from very high ratings immediately after the 2000 elections to that record low number today. And it's because they have proposed big taxes, big spending, have failed to support our troops in the war, are undermining our intelligence collection efforts, have shut the Republicans out of any meaningful discussions to move the country ahead, as they had promised to do during the campaign, and have demonstrated an utter lack of fiscal responsibility by recommending $205 billion in additional spending over the next 4 years and two of the biggest tax increases in American history.
Well, I barely know where to start. Carl's really got his talking points down, but there are reasonable explanations for virtually everything he's mischaracterized. I don't know if I can remember everything he's mischaracterized. Let's see if you remember them. Well, let's start with the, let's see if I can work backwards. So the two tax increases, the Bush tax cuts have amounted to, over by 2010, they will amount to $1.9 trillion taken out of our treasury. And coincidentally, the debt has risen during the Bush years from, it was actually going down. Total debt was dropping during the Clinton administration. We were paying off some of the debt because Clinton was running a surplus. Bush blew a hole in that. And, it, you know, they want to say, oh, well, 9/11 cost us hundreds of billions of dollars, downturn in the economy, the triple whammy. What was the third thing that he argued was the triple whammy? I forget. Ignorance in the White House, I guess. But in fact, we've gone from about $5.5 trillion in debt at, when Bush took over to, well, by the time he leaves, we'll be over $10 trillion. Barack Obama claimed the other day that Bush has doubled the debt, and somebody took him to task and said, no, he hasn't. But it's true, he hasn't yet. By the time he leaves office, he will. Today, we're at about $8.5 trillion. So he's only added $3 trillion to the debt. But basically, he's going to cut taxes $1.9 trillion, but he's not going to make that up. Rudy Giuliani currently has an ad playing in which he says that Democrats don't understand that when you cut taxes, you increase revenues. Yeah, the reason they don't understand it is because it's not true. This is the supply side economics. You know, they call it the Laffer curve for a reason. It's kind of like curveball with intelligence. When your contact is named curveball, you should wonder. When your economist is named Laffer, you should wonder about it. But Arthur Laffer back in the 70s and 80s convinced Reagan and the Republicans that you could cut taxes and increase revenues, the principle being that it would spur economic growth. And so the all through the Bush administration, all we've heard is, well, we need to cut taxes to spur economic growth. Then when they cut them, they said, well, we need to cut them more to spur more economic growth. Then when we're short on taxes and we've got too big a deficit and too big a debt, they said, well, you can't increase taxes. It'll cause a recession. No, that's not necessarily true. The difficulty here is that Bush has given away the store. So when the Democrats say they're going to have tax, or when Rove says the Democrats are going to have tax increases, the two he's talking about, I believe, are the refusal to extend the Bush tax cuts. Bush himself had set those to expire. You shouldn't be calling these tax increases. And this is where, again, Republicans and Democrats have the language they want. You know, when the Democrats were claiming that the Republicans wanted to cut Medicare or cut other social programs, Republicans were fond of saying, we are not cutting them. We're just slowing the rate of growth. Those are not cuts. They're still increasing. We're just not letting them increase as fast. Well, let's go to the Bush tax cuts. These are not tax increases. They're just not extending the Bush tax cuts. Bush himself set them up for 10 years. He must have expected them to expire. And by the way, if you remember, the reason he set them to expire was that if he hadn't, he couldn't have got them passed, because the amount of red ink he would have been predicting, he would never have got the Congress to sign up for it. Anyway, so that's Rove's first argument. Let me go on to his second argument. The next thing that Rove claimed was that, what did he say? He said that the Democrats, they're weakening our war on terror, or by this is the surveillance stuff. You know, there's quite a bit of evidence that the Bush administration violated the law, the FISA law. Now, Bush has all these signing statements where he says, well, the executive has virtually unlimited power in times of war, and anything that Congress passes that usurps my power, I don't have to pay attention to. But it's not at all clear that eventually they won't be held responsible for some of this crap. And, of course, in the telecommunications bill, the revision of the FISA Act, which, by the way, there's two bills that have to get handled before the Democratic Congress goes home for Christmas recess. And one of them is the FISA Act. The other one is not the extension of the money for Iraq. That can wait till the next year, despite what the Bush administration claims and despite what they've got the Pentagon claiming. They've got money until next year. But we've got to do something about the extension of FISA. And right now, the votes are kind of lining up. And I'm sorry to say this, because the Bush administration wants to give the telecom companies retroactive immunity. That is, anything you did that may have violated the rights of your customers, we forgive you because we asked you to do it. Here's the problem with that precedent. If telecom companies are forgiven after the fact for cooperating in what you can argue is a murky area, Joe Nachio, to his credit, told the government that Quest would not participate and not help them. But most of the other telecom companies buckled in the post 9/11 atmosphere and said, Mr. President, if you say you need it for national security, we'll give it to you. And they have not just been tracking Al-Qaeda. If you're paying any attention to this, and I know you are, you know that they're tracking all kinds of people. They're tracking millions of calls and millions of emails. So, that aside, Karl Rove also said, what else did he say? The Democrats, he says they've got momentum. The beginning of his statement, he said, the Democrats have got momentum. They've gone from their majority support in at the time of the 2006 election down to 26%. Well, how is that momentum, Carl? He doesn't want to admit that they actually have momentum because Republicans are on the ropes. Republicans are on the ropes for several reasons. Iraq, a primary one, although the argument is being made now by the inside the Beltway pundits that Iraq isn't going to matter so much in the 2008 election because it's going so much better. But, you know, we have such a short term reaction to some of these things. This idea that this lull in Iraq is going to continue, it may, and I hope it does, but the reason Iraq is a mistake is that it's not likely to calm down anytime soon. I hope I'm wrong. But I think Iraq will be a big issue next year. But just the general principle of the failed Bush administration from Katrina to, you know, they're going against the grain on everything from stem cell research to the $35 billion that the Democrats want to spend and a lot of Republicans want to spend on the health care, the S-CHIP, health care for children. When I say going against the grain, what I mean is that a majority of Americans support it and Bush is standing in the way and the Republicans are standing in the way. That does not bode well. Look at the retirements. That tells you what's going on. This is what happened when the Republicans took control of Congress in the early 90s, in 94. By the 96 election, a bunch of Democrats who were aging, let's say, decided to leave. They didn't want to be backbenchers. They didn't want to be in the minority. So they left and went and did other things. Senior Democrats did that kind of stuff. There were defections. The most recent defection on the Republican side was Trent Lott. He just won re-election last year. Now, it's true he was deposed after his comments at the Strom Thurmond 100th birthday party that were construed to be racist, and the Bush administration didn't back him, so he was removed from Republican leadership, but he was recently reinstated as part of the Republican leadership. And frankly, he was one of the people that always looked for common ground. He was partisan, but he would look for common ground with Democrats. But he's retiring. And, of course, the story behind that is that if you retire before January 1st, you only have to wait 1 year to lobby your colleagues in Congress and pull down the big bucks as a lobbyist on K Street. If you wait until after January 1st, you have to wait 2 years. And I don't think he plans to wait. Anyway, Rove went on this whole list of things, and I've forgotten the rest of them. So we're just going to continue and let Karl Rove finish his dissection of the 2008 election and the reasons why the Republicans are likely to gain seats.
The repeal of the Bush tax cuts, which is over $1 trillion in tax increases, and then a tax reform plan from the Ways and Means Committee chairman, which is $1 trillion in additional.
Okay, so I mentioned taxes already, but when he says the repeal of the Bush tax cuts, no, they're not going to repeal them. They're simply not going to extend them. There was talk of repealing them a couple of years ago. There's no time to repeal them now. Maybe they will repeal some of them, but basically they're just not going to extend them. There is talk of repeal. I shouldn't say that. It's unclear what's going to go through. So they might repeal some of them. I may have misspoken. But this other thing, the other tax package, this is an attempt to fix the alternative minimum tax, which is now being paid not just by multimillionaires who were escaping taxes as it was designed 20-some years ago, but it's now affecting people making $250,000, $200,000 a year. And so the idea is you've got to deal, and we've been dealing every year with the alternative minimum tax, giving people relief so they're not taxed too heavily in those brackets. They're making good money, but we're not trying to take too much from them. So the fix to the alternative minimum tax also costs billions of dollars, like, I don't know, $58 billion per year or something. And the Democrats are committed to fixing that.
Taxes. That's why they have gone from very high to very low. That momentum is going in the wrong way. Now, you may have more money than the Democratic Congressional, than the Republican Congressional Campaign Committee today, but the RNC has more money than the DNC. And let's see where the individual candidates are when it really matters next September or October. I'm confident the Republican candidates are going to have enough money to make enough damage out of this record to make gains in the Congress.
Okay, interesting. So he is saying that the Republicans will gain seats in the Congress. Now, he was wrong in 2006. Right before the election, he claimed the Republicans were going to make gains, when in fact they lost pretty badly. And Chris Wallace, of course, is Fox News. They're not going to call Karl Rove on that. They let him get away with claiming again that Republicans will have gains. They would never dare to question Karl Rove and say, well, you were wrong last time. Why are you right this time? But that's just whistling past the graveyard. There's nobody believes Republicans are going to make gains next year. I don't know what could happen that would have Republicans make gains. I guess Hillary Clinton could be caught in bed with a girl. That's the joke about male congressmen, right? Is that what gets you tossed out of Congress is not being caught with a woman, but caught with a man. Or there could be another terrorist attack, I suppose, on the U.S. of some scale that would allow someone like Rudy Giuliani to rally people around his message of fear. But short of that, there's no way. There is simply no way. Anyway, that is the latest on Karl Rove and his predictions. We already covered Bill Clinton and the fact that he was wrong, R-O-N-G, wrong about all this. Let's move on to the Sudan. Because another story in the news, and we're kind of moving into international politics here. Another story in the news is that Sudan detained and then charged and then convicted this British teacher who allowed her children, who were 7 years old, to name a teddy bear Muhammad. Now, she's a 54-year-old white woman who is in the Sudan because she wants to teach and work with poor children. And innocently, the kids wanted to name the teddy bear Muhammad, and so she allowed it. Then she was charged and then convicted. And I'm trying to remember what the penalty was when she was convicted. Sentenced to 15 days in jail initially. Now, the British are immediately negotiated to get her out of there. And then at the same time, what happened was there were protests. And thousands of Sudanese people, armed with clubs and swords and drums, burned pictures of the teacher in the capital, and demanded that she be executed, saying she'd insulted Islam. Now, there's a couple of things about this that I simply don't understand. One is I really don't understand this. How is it that you're allowed to name your children Muhammad, but you can't mention the prophet's name otherwise? You remember a year or so ago, the cartoons that were published in a Dutch magazine that were humor about Muhammad were
caused an outrage, and people actually got killed or trampled in protest marches in Pakistan, I think. But a lot of people name their kids Muhammad. I'm not sure why that's allowed. I guess a teddy bear is an insult, but a kid is a compliment or something. The second thing about it is that think about our Muhammad, Jesus, in Western societies. Hispanic families might name their children Jesus, but I don't know one regular white European type person, family, that names their kids Jesus. Now, it's not like there's anything, any prohibition against it. We just don't do it. I guess it's out of respect. I don't know. Anyway, so the rabid crowds in Sudan are calling for the woman's execution. And, of course, that has the right wing in this country and other places in the West up in arms. A couple of things to remember. This is taking place in the Sudan. And those of you who pay attention to world affairs, and I know if you're listening to this show, you do, know that Sudan is in just a spot of trouble with the U.S. and the West right now. Got a little thing called Darfur going on, and we are holding their feet to the fire over the genocide in Darfur. We're not really doing that much, but they're feeling the pressure. Secondly, they're not, what's the right word? They are not unfamiliar in Sudan with whipping up anti-Western sentiment by using Muslim versus the West, right? Because what it does is it allows them to direct the anger that might be directed at the government at an outside force. And of course, the United Nations has been accusing Sudan of dragging its feet on the deployment of peacekeepers in Darfur. And Britain and the U.S. are part of that. So they get this issue, and they don't really want to harm relationships with Britain, but they're putting Britain on the defensive. So now Britain is negotiating with them, saying, oh, come on, release this woman, please. They will release her, and then hopefully, they hope Britain will back off on the Darfur issue. So it's a game being played in part. And by the way, the government put together this rally. This was not a spontaneous protest. No one believes that. Doesn't mean the hatred's not real and that people don't think that she should be executed. They might really believe that. But, you know, there's over-the-top people everywhere. Now, it's true that our conservatives and fundamentalists aren't as radical as their fundamentalists, but it's a matter of education and a matter of degree. So I have trouble getting too excited about this, except to say that governments will often whip up their own people against an outside force, and we need to be careful about that. I mean, Putin has done it in Russia, right? They had an election yesterday. In fact, we'll move on to international when we come back. I get to go to politics, but I think I'll do international briefly. And then we still need to talk about the death of Evel Knievel. When we come back.